Welcome to Blast to the Past, a show where we revisit the media, the movies that shaped our culture. My name's Landry Smith, and I'm with my co-host today, Tab. How you doing, Tab?
I am doing fantastic, Landry. What do you mean co-host today? Do you have another co-host?
My co-host every single week on the show. We're in a routine now.
How many of these have you done without me?
Tab, I told you, man, on the intros, I need to be scripted. You're like, let's just go free flow. And I was like, yeah. Okay, I'll give it a shot. But don't expect me to be perfect on these things.
It's more natural.
Yeah, you're right. The rest of the show is unscripted. So why start off with training wheels, you know?
Absolutely. No, I've been great. How are you?
I'm good, man. Into school. I'm a school teacher by day. And that's been nice. Just kind of. We had graduation last night, so wrapping things up, which is nice.
What grade?
I teach seniors.
That's a real graduation, not that bullshit.
Yeah.
Sixth grade graduation.
No, it's the real deal. Yeah, we were at McKenzie Arena. It was cool. It was
wow. Good. Okay. It's a big one.
Yeah. But today we're not talking about graduation. We're not talking about how we're doing. We're talking about the 1992 kind of hit film, My Cousin Vinny, which was directed by Jonathan Flynn and stars Joe Pesci and Marissa Tomei and kind of Ralph Macchio. He's not really, I mean, he's there, but he's just kind of like in the background for most of the movie. You know, I wouldn't say that he stars in this film, but his name is probably in the credits. You think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's there.
He lurks.
Yeah.
He lurks in the background of many of the scenes. But this movie's about a couple of college kids named Bill and Stan, and that they're played by Ralph Macchio and Mitchell Whitfield. They're two college kids. They're from New York. They're on a road trip down to Alabama, and they stop at a corner store and buy literally, seemingly like every dry storage good in the gas station. There is probably like the biggest purchase that gas station's ever had. And they accidentally steal a can of tuna. And this is a big deal to them. I feel like for most people, if this had happened, it just would have been like a shoulder shrug, you know? But they're freaking out about it. And then suddenly a cop pulls them over and they're arrested, not for stealing a can of tuna, but as suspects for murder. And they don't really realize that. There's this interrogation scene where they basically like indict themselves. And instead of going to a public defender after a terribly misguided call with his mother, Macchio's character Bill decides to give his cousin Vinny a call, played by Joe Pesci. And Vinny's this like fast talking New York guy, kind of probably belongs more in a car garage than in a courtroom, I would say. Mm-hmm. And he's actually quite inept in a courtroom, as we find out pretty quickly. Vinny brings his fiance. I never caught her name in the movie, but in IMDb, it says Mona Lisa Vito is her name.
Yes, that is right. Okay. I did not write that down, nor did I know Ralph Macchio's name was Bill.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I did make note early on, Billy and Stan, I simply just referred to him as Daniel-san. In all of my notes. So he is dead.
Okay, that's perfect. That's a great great callback. Lisa Vito is played by Marissa Tomei. She won Best Supporting Actress for this role. And she really, in my opinion, kind of steals the show. I mean, this is mostly a Joe Pesci vehicle. He is hilarious, but every scene she's in, she's just like lightning in a bottle. She's smart. She's adorable. And she helps Vinny find his footing in the courtroom. But what I didn't realize going into this is that this is a comedy. I thought it was more of a drama, a courtroom drama, or even like, I don't even know really what I was getting into. I told you before, like I had never really looked up a preview or anything. I had no idea.
It's your first
time
watching it, right?
Yeah. And so I thought it was, because I knew Joe Pesci was in it, I thought it was a mafia movie, but it's a comedy and then it's got an engaging plot too. I mean, it is like a comedy courtroom drama. And I think if you like a courtroom drama, you're probably really going to get a lot out of this movie.
Yeah, so I've watched this movie a lot. Full disclosure, I'm from Alabama. So as a kid from Alabama, you know, I was 10 years old when this came out. And I was a huge fan of it just because Alabama, you know, the movie is set in Alabama, even though not exactly in the best way.
Yeah, I would say that Alabama's not like particularly favorable, although it's not like grossly caricaturized. I mean, you've got like your southern cartoonish characters, but it's not like one of those movies that just is there to take a big dump on the South.
Right. And there, trust me, when I was a kid, I went through many towns like this place. I remember going to visit my grandmother in Talladega, and we would drive through Sylacauga. And this kind of city just kind of reminds me of a lot of the towns. This movie reminds me of a lot of the towns that we would pass through on the way to Talladega. So this was always a big movie, a movie that I really thoroughly enjoyed. It had a very, maybe it was delusional, but I had a really respected, I'm struggling for the word here, but I had it in high regard. I really, really enjoyed this movie when I was a kid. So I was very interested to see how I was going to like it as an adult. Now, along that line you were talking about, going into this, and I've seen this movie 6-7 times. Going into it, I wasn't 100% certain it was a comedy either. But you got to understand, yeah, I haven't seen it in 20 years. You know, I go in thinking, okay, this is going to be a movie that maybe has a few laughs. And for the most part, it's a courtroom story, you know, a courtroom movie. And I found myself laughing out loud several times in this movie. It has some really good laughs. And on the topic of Marissa Tomei, absolutely knocked out of the park. Home run. Why is she with Joe Pesci?
Agreed. When you go back and watch 90s movies, sometimes I'm like, man, I could see why she's attractive, but like the hair or like the style, I'm just like, it doesn't do it. She is like absolutely adorable in every single scene.
Agreed. And, yep.
I mean, yeah. And then Joe Pesci is like, he could be anywhere from 35 because they like didn't hydrate in the 90s and everyone looks old as hell, or 65 in this movie. And, you know, she looks like she's like maybe 24, and not just like 24, but like, you know, a 10, you know. So I don't understand why they're together.
She should be an 11 considering she's a 10, even with the 1990s style, which I'm on record, late 80s, early 90s, probably the worst period in Western civilization for style. God awful. I don't know who thought neon was a good idea, but God, we ran with it. Like, we found neon and we're like, oh my God, like, put that shit on everything. Like, I mean, it was not a good time for fashion. I know fashion's secular, and every time I see something from the 90s come back, I'm just like, oh,
right.
Disgusting.
The 90s are
tough. Let those stonewashed jeans die, please.
Yeah.
We don't need those back.
Exactly. And, you know, I guess the kids around today, like, they haven't experienced it yet, but we've already got our fill. I mean, I could go without ever seeing those again.
It wasn't just like 1989 became 90, which I remember. I remember when 89 became 90. I was a kid on New Year's, you know, counting it down.
Do not.
And it's not like when that happened, we just let go of the 80s. No, that shit bled. The 80s like bled into the early 90s. It probably wasn't until grunge that things really started to change in like 92, 93, that kind of time. I mean, it was gross. So I got a lot to say about this one. First off, full disclosure, big fan. Heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking to find out the movie not filmed in Alabama.
Just shatters your entire childhood perspective.
Found that while researching when the movie first started. So there's a scene early on when they pull into Alabama, and they even have the Sweet Home Alabama sign. I'm like, well, all right. I go, I'm curious. You know, what city was this film did? You know, what city in Alabama? Pulled it up. Not even Alabama. It is actually Monticello, Georgia. Okay. 62 miles southeast of where I live.
Yeah, I was going to guess Florida or Georgia. It seems like a lot of movies are filmed in around the Atlanta area.
Yeah. In a little podunk town, 62 miles, not even a good road to get there. It's not like right off the highway, let's just say that. Like, it's down there.
It definitely looks the part. I mean, it's rural South. You know it when you see it.
Oh, yeah. They did a great job. I mean, all they had to do was go to a small town.
Yeah.
I was thinking Scottsboro, Alabama. Honestly, that's what I thought they filmed this was like Scottsboro.
Okay.
It's not what they did. Unfortunately,
I probably didn't get any tax cuts, man.
Yeah, the Alabama film industry in 1992 wasn't exactly booming.
What was, except for Muscle Shoals down there?
Yeah, Muscle Shoals Sound. Yeah, that was a big deal. Actually, that was up. Muscle Shoals is North Alabama. It's right along the Tennessee border, I think.
All right. So, historically speaking, we're talking about a movie that was made in 1992, a movie that made $52.9 million at the box office in 1992. Which is respectable. It was the 31st biggest movie that year. This was a year led by Batman Returns. But this was a big year for blockbuster hits. There was Home Alone 2, Lethal Weapon 3, A League of Their Own, Sister Act.
Oh, League of Their Own!
Yeah, Sister Act, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, So Disney came out with a couple of bangers that
year. Yeah, a couple of bangers for Disney that year.
Yeah, Basic Instinct, Unforgiven.
Basic Instinct, wow. That was the one with the leg crossing, right? That was
I believe so, yeah. So that was just, you know, that was me just scraping the top of the list there. So this was all the way down at 31. So it wasn't like a huge hit, but it was respectable. I mean, a lot of people saw it. But I think this movie, like we've talked about with some of the other movies we've watched, had a huge life on cable television and also was a really successful rental for VHS in the early 90s as well.
I can see that. What was the box office in China on this one? I'm just curious. Do you have that in front of you? I can't imagine them, you know, standing in line to watch My Cousin Vinny. You know?
Great dub translation in Chinese. It's known for that.
I don't think Marissa Tomei is going to translate well, to be honest with you. I just don't think whoever's doing that voiceover, I don't think she's going to win the Oscar.
Yep. Yeah. So, you know, I already mentioned she won Best Supporting Actress. I mean, honestly, I was surprised when I read that, but at the same time, this was kind of her big breakthrough film. I think she was pretty much an unknown quantity before that. She'd done some TV before, and really, she just kind of has this authority on the screen where she commands like a great presence in every single scene she's in. Even when she's in the courtroom towards the end with some other, you know, big actors, she just kind of crushes every single line. Joe Pesci does a great job. He's hilarious in this, and he plays both sides of the coin really well. I think the kind of like doofus New Yorker who's like still, you know, obviously got street smarts but has no idea what normal courtroom procedures are supposed to look like, and then you get at the end you get to see his kind of, you know, interrogation skills.
So you had just mentioned she won Best Supporting Actress, and then you mentioned some fantastic movies, and I was thinking, okay, she must have been up against some real heavy hitters for the Oscars. Not so much.
Yeah.
The competition for her best supporting actress were Judy Davis for Husbands and Wives, Joan Plowright, not a real name, Enchanted April, never heard of it.
Same.
Vanessa Redgrave for Howard's End, Miranda Richardson for Damage.
Okay. Yeah. I would have thought maybe, you know, Howard's End's like a real artsy film, so that would have been probably the front runner going in, but she got it. So I don't know any of the other ones you mentioned, though, at all. So
I don't even know the movies.
Yeah, me neither. I really didn't. Other than Howard's End, I've never heard of any of those.
I've heard of Miranda Richardson or Joan, a.k.a. Plowright.
Yeah, that's a really unfortunate name. You'd never want to be a high school teacher with that name.
And whoever Judy Davis is, the photo on Google is not good. Like, this is like that photo when you're a washed up actress getting arrested for drugs at 1 a.m.
Oh, no.
But it's not that. It's on a red carpet.
Passage to India, Husbands and Wives. I may have heard of that, actually. That's possibly... Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's a rough... Okay, it's a Woody Allen movie. So as goofy as some of the dialogue in the courtroom towards the first half of the film is, I think the back half for like a comedy movie kind of moves into like this almost like courtroom drama thing. And I think we're talking about like historical context and why this movie may have been kind of propped up. There's people like you who maybe had like this, you know, there wasn't a lot of movies in the South growing up, you know? So maybe for us Southerners, we can hold a place too. But I think a lot of people who like study law come across this movie and really are fond of it as well.
Yeah, that's what we have this internet, and Deliverance. That's what it's like.
Oh, yeah. This, Deliverance, another great movie. Maybe we should watch
Smokey and the Bandit. What else we got here?
Yeah, it's rough going. So until Talladega Nights, you know? All right. What do you got, Tab? Let's get into our best segment, Tab's Notes.
I thought you were already doing it. You kind of gave us already a recap. I was like, where's Landon going with this one? He's stealing my thunder.
That's just my summary, dude.
All right. My Cousin Vincent opens on a 2-lane Alabama highway as Danielson and friend drive their 1964 Buick Skylark convertible. This is going to be a big part of the movie. You thought that car rolling into Sweet Home Alabama was just for show? Hell no. That's a key piece of evidence. Without that car, those two boys are fried. All right. Also, early on, rebel flag sighting. Not great. Not a good look. In the background, hanging on a wall or outside a barn or something. And then they enter Beecham County. Beecham County, boy. Welcome to Beecham County. And they go into the pool into the Sack O Suds. Not Sack of Suds. Sack O Suds. Suds. Yeah. Okay, they pull into the Sack O Suds. And Danielson proceeds to, as you stated, fill his arms to the absolute max capacity with items. And as you alluded to, somehow with, I don't know, no less than 27 items in his hands, thinks that small can of tuna is just the straw that broke the camel's back. And he cannot possibly put that in his hand while he has his arms wrapped around all those random snacks, you know. So he puts it in his pocket, goes to the checkout, gets a slush puppy. Okay, when I was a kid, slush puppies were life. Okay,
oh,
I
remember. Yeah. Absolutely.
I lived in Montgomery, Alabama. We lived on Narrow Lane Road. It's an extremely long road. Okay, it's residential. I live like at the beginning of Narrow Lane Road. That son of a bitch goes on for like 90 miles. Okay, I'm not kidding. Now, Narrow Lane goes to like Mississippi. It just goes forever. All right. So if we went down about 4 miles down Narrow Lane Road, we would come across this Food Mart. It was just called Food Mart. It was like attached to an Amco gas station.
When there's no competition, you don't need to worry about a name. You just Food Mart, it's perfect. They let you know what it is.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't need Terry's Food Mart. Okay. I don't know who Terry is. Just give me the Food Mart, you know? So we would go there and we would get slush puppies. And my sister and I were like, we could not have been happier in 1990 with the slush puppy in one hand and a TV remote in the other. Brother, we were living the dream.
Yeah, it's the life.
Yeah, it's the life. So they get the they order a slush puppy, and the clerk at Sack O Suds completely half-asses his job. Pours about half a cup of slush puppy in there, right?
Yeah, man. I'm gonna be honest. Like his slush puppy pour, it kind of I didn't really have a lot of empathy for him when he got murdered because he probably deserved it. The way he's pouring slush puppies, that's not acceptable.
It's probably how he got murdered. Let's be honest. They left. Two other guys come in, said slush puppy. They got half a slush puppy. And they just this was not the day to pour half a slush puppy. And this guy just starts blasting. Okay. I'm telling you right now, they probably didn't even take money out of the register. It was probably a crime of passion. Like, I don't blame them. So Danielson, though, at least speaks up and is like, you mind pouring the rest of that slush puppy? So long story short, they get in their car, they're driving out. All right. They pay for their food, they leave, they're driving on the road. And Danielson's like, oh my God, I got a can of tuna in my jacket. And his friend's like, you know what they do to people in Alabama? If you steal a can of tuna, like, they're gonna give you the chair. Like, they're gonna kill you.
You know? Medieval laws.
Get out of here. By the way, also, they're on their way from New York to Southern California to go to school. And they decided to take the scenic route. Maybe in hindsight.
That's a hell of a scenic route as well, man. From New York, you're going all the way down to Alabama? What is the purpose?
Makes no sense. They pass every major highway that would take you clear across the United States to California. Why didn't you go all the way to Alabama? I mean, you could have gone, you know, straight to the center of the country. You could have gone through St. Louis, I'm sure. You know, I'm sure there's things to see. They chose Alabama, and brother, they chose wrong.
Maybe they wanted to see the Gulf.
Like you said, cop pulls them over. Stan, who's the friend, Stan's intuition comes through and his spidey sense is tingling and off they go to jail. They're still under the impression all they were guilty of was stealing a can of tuna. So they confess to whatever the sheriff of Beecham County wants them to confess to. Turns out it's murder. All right. So that's when Danielson says, we have an attorney in the family. Who? My cousin Vinny. I love a good titular line.
Oh, yeah.
titular lines. I don't know if I want to watch a movie that doesn't have a titular line, to be honest with you. I don't care how insane or just off the wall it is. Find a way to work it in there, all right? Vinny and Marissa Tomei show up out of water. Okay, that is what the underlying theme of this movie is it's fish out of water. Okay, you got two New York, actually got four New Yorkers, you know. You got the Jewish kid, Stan, and you got these three super Italian, you know, Vinny, Marissa Tomei, Danielson. They're down now in Beecham County, Alabama. Okay. The boys arrived to prison, and it is not a warm welcome. Fresh fish alert. Okay. It's very reminiscent of, like, Shawshank, you know. Only thing I didn't have was a guard beating somebody to death. Vinny arrives.
Hard to come back.
This is the first scene in the movie where I go, oh yeah, this is a comedy. So Stan does not know who Vinny is. He just knows there's Vinny. And then Daniel's son goes to sleep in the prison cell while Stan stays awake, and he gets a visitor. And Stan is on like high alert. He doesn't know what's going on. He's terrified. He's in a prison in Alabama. And the guard brings him a guy. The door's open. In comes Vinny. Stan thinks he's about to be raped in prison. And they have this conversation.
Really funny.
There's a lot of double entendres. And it's a lot of things that can be taken out of context. And Vinny's like, and Stan thinks he's about to get assaulted, right? And Vinny is saying all the things that could be you're about to get assaulted.
Right.
They could also be I'm your lawyer, you know. So that was a very funny scene. That actually made me laugh. And I was like, oh yeah, like I forgot this movie might actually have some humor in it. And I really enjoyed that scene. Okay, so they meet with Vinny. His first trial. They're meeting with Vinny, and Vinny's kind of giving him the background of his or lack thereof for his law degree. Right. So he has very little experience. It took him 6 years to pass the bar exam. Vinny meets the judge.
Great character,
Herman Munster.
Yes. First thing I noticed,
Herman Munster. This guy is intense. Okay, he might be a small town Alabama judge, but just for you to know. The courtroom of Beecham County, Alabama is just as sophisticated as any courtroom you're going to find in New York City.
Yes. All right? Which means it's probably more sophisticated, more locked down.
Marissa Tomei and Vinny have quite the hotel experience. That's another kind of reoccurring joke that kind of pops up like almost every night. So the first hotel they go to is General Putnam Motel. General Putnam. Went down his little Wikipedia rabbit hole of old General Putnam. His name is Israel Old Putt Putnam. Major General during the American Revolution. Also fought for the British at one point.
Interesting.
Pick a side, Putt.
Turncoat.
Pick a side. All right. Steam whistle wakes the two up at 5:30 a.m. Okay. That's the first interruption of having a good night. Trying to get some sleep here in Beecham County, Alabama. And you got a steam whistle at 5:30 a.m.
Relatively normal interruption. You know, it's going
to
be weird.
They decide to go to the hotel, I assume it's a hotel cafe, could be just a cafe, to get breakfast the next day, okay? Do you notice when they open the menu,
it says... Oh, it's great. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
It's like, what do you want? Open it up, breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Incredible.
Breakfast, $1.99.
I noticed that as well.
For breakfast. Oh, those were the days. I think lunch was $2.99. Dinner was probably $3.49. I mean, you want to eat late in the day, you better pay the extra price.
That's right.
So... they're making breakfast, right? And two things. One, there is an unhealthy amount of lard used on that griddle. This guy's going to have two customers all day. All right, they come in asking for bacon, eggs, grits, whatever. And he slaps down enough lard to feed like an army. Like just slaps it
down.
It's
like
right?
$2 worth.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Vinny asks, what's a grit? Okay. And he does not know what a grit is. And the chef tells him it's a. Comes corn and hominy. When I was in high school, my friend Brent and I had a little racket, okay, in Montgomery, Alabama. We went to every Waffle House in Montgomery. There's like damn near 20. We went one by one. Even if we had to go like 20 miles out of route, we would go to this new Waffle House, right? We would pretend to be Canadian and tell the waitress we didn't know what grits were. And
incredible.
We got free grits 100% of the time. One time, in like the worst part of town, we did this little ruse of ours. And the lady goes, you don't know what grits are? And we're like, no idea. You know, we're doing Canadian accents or whatever. And she goes into the back of the Waffle House, like in the kitchen, and she just come out with like a bowl of grits. She comes out with a unopened bag of grits and hands it to us. Somewhere in my mom's house is probably a small white Waffle House bag of grits. I kept it. I mean, I was like, my mind was blown. This is the only time we didn't get cooked grits.
It's collectible.
For free. We didn't get cooked grits. We got take-home grits.
Like, just take this study up.
Yeah. So anyway, grits are a big deal in the state of Alabama. Okay. So now they're in court. Vinny has no idea what he is doing. He is immediately held in contempt and goes to prison. This area must not have a county jail because you have a guy who is in jail for contempt of court. Shoulder to shoulder with like murderers, like
we can only
child
assume,
molesters,
yeah.
Like it's insane. Like there's
he's at a high security prison.
Yes,
which
immediately,
looks
an awful
lot like a public. Yeah,
you don't come into Herman Munster's court acting a fool and not expect to spend some time in Alcatraz. Like they send your ass to the worst one. There's a hillbilly pool hall. Okay, every town in Alabama has one of these. Marissa Tomei is like that is a guy in that pool hall. that I hustled. I took his money and he won't pay. $200. This is another reoccurring source of comedy in this movie. Is yes. this $200 of this hillbilly welched on, right? They're in the pool hall. A man proceeds to eat an entire chicken, like drumstick, in one bite.
That was probably the most horrifying thing I've seen in like five films that I've watched. It was disgusting.
I wrote one word down, impressive. This man.
I don't know about that. Thanks. I guess it was. It made an impression on me.
Like a whole drumstick, not a chicken wing. This is not some, you know, 10 for, you know, $5 special at Wingstop. This is an actual KFC drumstick. Sticks it in his mouth, pulls it out, clean like a velociraptor got it. Okay. All gone one bite. Highly impressive. Then he goes up to the man that welched on Marissa Tomei's wager, right? And absolutely punks this guy in front of all his hillbilly friends. Punked to the max, all right? There ain't no recovering from this. Like, this is where you start to say, like, oh, Vinny's a little sharp. Vinny's a little sharp guy, right?
Yes. Yeah, this was the first scene, I think, where you realize that, oh, he's got some redeeming qualities.
Yeah. And then we're back in the jail. Stan has doubts about Vinny, and probably for good reason, right? Sure. So now they're back in court with the witness testimony. This is pre-trial. They do the witness testimony. And this is multiple people identifying Daniel San and Stan as the killers. Okay. Not looking good for our boys. Okay. Vinny held in contempt yet again, back to prison. Now they're in a new hotel. Okay. Vinny admits he's in over his head and he's scared. Like he is scared. In the conversation he has with Marissa Tomei, he's terrified. One of the things that frustrates me about this movie is she is clearly so intelligent and so bright and can help him in 11 different ways, and he chooses to just keep ignoring her all the way until the end. Okay. That was kind of frustrating, but I understand. You want plot, you want, you know, you want story, you know, you want some contention. Okay, whatever. All right. So a rooster and a pig now wake them up. Rooster first, and then about 62 pigs right across the street go absolutely bananas, and they wake him up, right? So now he's been woken up twice, right? Stan recommends to Daniel San, maybe we should try the public defender. What a character that guy was, by the way.
Oh, my gosh. I had a hard time watching him on screen, to be honest.
I thought he did a really good job. Stan meets with a new attorney. He's a very southern drawl, slightly older fella. Not much compliment, but at least gets a little confidence, right? So Daniel San meets with Vinny. Sorry, Vin, you're out. Okay. Vinny is a card trick. And I watched it a few times and I didn't see any cuts. Like he must have learned this card trick because Joe Pesci performs a sleight of hand card trick that leads Daniel San to believe, okay, maybe there's hope for the future. Maybe he can do this. Maybe he can win the case, you know, because no one pulls the eyes over a Gambino. Vinny once again punks the hillbilly from the bar. He says, so at the bar, Vinny's like, you got my $200, you owe my girl? And he's like, no, but I'm going to kick your ass. He's like, I'm not going to fight you until you get my $200. And so the guy's like, all right. So now Vinny's walking down the street in, you know, Beach County, Alabama. And he comes across this hillbilly again. And he's like, hey, city boy, I got you $200. And he's holding up a wad of money. And Vinny's like, how do I know that's not just a bunch of ones wrapped in a 20?
Now you're thinking.
Now you're thinking like an Alabama, you know. It absolutely was a bunch of ones wrapped in a 20. Pumped again. All right.
This now guy is the one guy from Alabama that just makes, he's like the typecast, like, stupid Alabaman, you know, corn-fed, huge, could probably beat up most people, but he just got nothing in the tank as far as brains goes.
And him that was the and one. Two of the eyewitnesses. Those three single-handedly pulled us down.
Yeah. That's true. You're right.
Now they're in a new hotel. New hotel, things seem fine. It's about, I don't know, 4 or 5 a.m. Train rolls by. Furniture rattling, shaking, dishes falling off the cabinet walls and breaking. How does this hotel stay in business when you must constantly be buying new silverware? You're buying new glassware. You're buying new plates, new bowls. I don't understand it. Maybe not silverware. It won't break. It might bend. It won't break. Okay.
It reminded me of the scene from Annie Hall where Woody Allen is with his family, you know, and they live like, I think they live over a roller coaster. Like their house is underneath a roller coaster. Ugh. I'm pretty sure it might be I can't remember. It's been a long time since I've seen it. But anyway, every time it goes by, like their whole house just like shakes. It's really funny.
How tall is this house underneath the roller
coaster?
It's
very small. It's very small. It might be under a train track. I could be misremembering.
All righty. So Then he meets with the Alabama state prosecutor. Okay, this is rather DA or something. I don't know what his title is, right? And they're exchanging stories. It's about how they became lawyers. The prosecutor was a former defender, kind of got tired of getting a bunch of scumbags off. And Vinny talked his way out of a traffic ticket, and the judge took pity on him. So very heartwarming, meeting between the two. And the attorney offers to bring Vinny hunting. What a letdown that is, okay? So you see Vinny and the lawyer driving to the hunting trip. Never once see any hunting.
Yes.
They never get out of the car. I was excited for, okay, they're on this trip. They're going to go hunting. Now we got a really big fish out of water story, an angle here.
I
A
was
guy
really
from New York
expecting some foul play in this
trying to
scene.
hunt. Zero hunting at all. It's literally like Vinny and the lawyer in a pickup truck going to hunt. And the next thing you see is Vinny's walking into his hotel talking to Marissa Tomei. I'm like, where's the hunting trip? Like, we missed the hunting trip.
Running victory laps, yeah.
Yeah. So,
Yeah, the way they set that scene up, though, I really expected foul play. I thought that that guy was going to take advantage of Vinny, but that's never what this movie did. And I'll talk about that at some point, but I really appreciate that. I feel like there were multiple times where they could have made it just like take down a more depressing way or something. But this is the 90s. It's not 2025. We don't have to have all this realism in our stories in this movie. It's cartoonish. It's fun
Not
the whole way
needed
through.
and, frankly, unwanted.
Exactly.
So the lawyer on this alleged hunting trip, which we never saw take place, on this alleged hunting trip, the lawyer discloses to Vinny that I'll send you all my file. Vinny thinks that's a big W. Wrong. Marissa Tomei is intelligent, and she knows that that lawyer has to give him the files. So Vinny is in way over his head at this point. Honestly, at this point, I'm cheering for the public defender. I'm like, these boys are about to fry. Like,
Right. Yeah, you just don't want the kids to die.
Vinny is single-handedly going to kill his nephew or cousin, his cousin,
Cousin.
Daniel's
It's in
son,
the title.
and Daniel's son's friend, who seems to have a bright future as they both graduated from somewhere in New York. Did we ever see the school? I
I
remember in
can't
the opening
remember, yeah.
scene, as they're leaving, like maybe they're either driving down the highway after they took the tuna or before they go to Sacco Suds, and you see in the back seat there's like a school book. I don't think it was Yale, but I thought you saw some kind of college book. I don't know if it was I don't remember if it was like an connected to a particular university. I don't remember, but it tells you that they're coming from college and they're driving from New York to California. Vinny starts meeting witnesses. Okay, this doesn't exactly go very well. He's just he's talking to witnesses, and they're kind of giving their side of the story. These are the three people that are going to testify. One guy saying he saw the boys, or the guys, I should say, the clerk, and run out. Another guy said he was making breakfast, saw him, heard the gunshot, saw those guys running out. And then this nice little old lady says, I saw them with my own two eyes. And now we have three eyewitnesses all saying that Daniel Son is standing guilty, right? So not going too well for Vinny. Once again, the train rolls through, knocks all the plates off the walls and stuff like that. Jury selection. Death penalty is definitely on the table. The one juror they talk to absolutely wants them to
Oh
fry.
yeah,
Like,
she's got a bloodlust.
yes, bloodthirsty. Vinny meets with the judge. New York has never heard of one Vincent Gambino or Gambini. Vincent Gambini. So Vincent Gambini, Vinny makes up this elaborate story about, he was an actor. There's another actor named Vincent Gambini. So he changed his name to Joey Gallo. Okay, which was his big, well-known, apparently, New York attorney at the time. I'm Jerry Gallo. Was it Jerry? Yeah, Jerry Gallo. Okay. Famous New York attorney. Bad news, he's dead. Okay.
That's a
So
pretty solid headlines.
Vinny tells Marissa, like, hey, I had this great, I got cornered, and I made up a story where I was Jerry Gallo. And she's like, oh, that's a great story. Jerry Gallo's an amazing lawyer. He was in the paper last week. What for? He's dead. So now they're at the attorney's cabin. Okay, you're out of the city, the big city of Beecham County. You're away from all the big lights of Times Square, and now you're in the middle of nowhere at this attorney's cabin trying to get your first sound night of sleep since you've been in the South. Except an owl had other plans. The next day, on sleep deprived, I
So
can
yeah,
imagine.
these guys are probably going on
Yeah.
like 2 weeks and like 6 hours of sleep at this
Yes, yeah.
point.
So They're outside. This, to me, is one of the best scenes in the movie. Okay, so they're on the patio, or the porch, I guess we'll call it, the porch of this cabin. And Marissa Tomei is talking to Vinny about, you promised you would marry me when you win your first case. My biological clock is ticking, you know, all that. And then Joe Pesci, Vinny, goes on to give a really, really good performance here. Along with Marissa Tomei. This is the best, in my opinion, between this and the very end. This is the best, right? So great scene. You know, Al wakes him up that night. I guess the owl wakes up after the scene on the porch. And Vinny comes out with an absolute hand cannon and just starts blasting rounds of gunfire off into the woods.
I forgot about that.
Zero, okay, concern for innocent people that might be, you know, off the an acre or two away.
Off the beaten path.
Yeah, does not care. So because the owl, they decide to sleep in their car. So they're sleeping in this red car in the middle of a field, and it starts to rain, okay? So now they get the next day. Vinny's got to get to court. They're waking up late. There's no alarm. So he goes and, he steps on the gas and one wheel spins. The other tire does nothing. Very important. Little things like this.
Very important.
That when you see them in real time, you don't think it's a big deal in the movie. Turns out, kind of a big deal. Okay. So now he's covered in mud. He goes to go and try and get a jack from the trunk of the car to try and, or, you know, try and get the vehicle moving. Slips and falls in mud. Also ruins his suit. Okay. Not ready for court. His suit lands in mud. They finally get the car unstuck and they get to downtown. They are pressed for time. They have 30 minutes to shower, get a new suit, get dressed, and get to the courthouse. The hillbilly shows up again. This time he actually has 200 real U.S. dollars. Vinny punches him
in
the face.
By this point, too, in the movie, it's like, I feel like I completely forgot about that storyline, you know, like it just, I love how these little jokes, like the, you know, the hotel one and them not getting sleep. And then also this guy, this Alabama dude, just keep popping up throughout the movie. It is kind of a comedy, recurring comedy bit.
Yeah. It's a bunch of reoccurring themes or reoccurring bits in this movie. Vinny shows up late wearing what can only be described as a suit from pre-Civil War. It's like a mariachi band guy. It's cranberry, like, you know, and, you know, the judge, who's already upset at him for what suits he wears. He's worn a leather suit at one point, or maybe he didn't even wear a suit to begin with. Maybe he wore like a leather
like
suit,
leather,
which
yeah.
does not even remotely look good, sound good, cannot feel good. That leather suit was wearing him, okay?
Yeah.
Like, it was like 11 sizes too big. It was draped over this man. Again, 1990s fashion. I'll let it die. So Vinny held in contempt yet again. Back to the poke house. All right. This time I think he decides to stay in prison to finally get a good night's sleep, right?
Right.
Yeah. Solid and he sleeps through like a prison riot. Like Vinny is in jail in a bunk bed, and there's an absolute bedlam going on in the background, like prison riot. He's just out like a light for the first time, right?
So tribes in chaos.
Now the trial is starting. You've got the jury selected, and you've got the state prosecutor addressing the jury before the trial. And this is a very nice scene. And in it, the guy says, it means truth. It's a word that comes down from old England and all our little old ancestors. And they immediately cut to this black lady in the jury who was looking at this guy like, are you sure all our ancestors? And that shit made me laugh. Like I watched it like three times. I don't know if it was intentional, but this guy said like, you know, he's addressing his jury and he's like, oh, our little old ancestors. And then they focus in on the one lady who's like, I don't know about that one. And I don't know why I got such a kick out of that. I love that scene. So they give their opening statements. Vinny, it's his turn to speak to the jury. He's asleep. Okay. Absolute dumpster fire. How he still has a job, I have no idea. Stan was right. Okay. Vinny's asleep. He wakes up to address the jury, and his statement's very short. I'm a fan of being very concise. And he basically says, everything that guy said was bullshit. Thank you. Very professional.
Right. Well, concise gets the job
done. That did not go over well with old Herman Munster. Okay. Judge Munster did not appreciate that. The public defender gets up to speak. Okay. And this guy is stuttering. I thought this was really good acting. Like, he did a really good job here. Okay.
He has a real, stuttering. He apparently has a real stutter in real life. And
he let it fly.
He didn't want to do the movie because he was friends with Jonathan Lynn, the director, and the director was like, please, you're perfect for it. And he was afraid that Hollywood would typecast him as a stutterer for the rest of his career. And that's exactly what happened. But he does do a really good job. It's hard to watch, to be honest, yeah, for me.
It is hard. It's hard in a good way. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I really did appreciate it. I thought he did a fantastic job. It was very limited screen time. Okay. I just wrote down here, public defender tries. He can't get a word out. He's stuttering. What a performance by the public defender. What a performance. I thought he did fantastic. Okay. So now the witnesses ID the killers. Okay. Then he begins to cross-examine the witnesses. This is one of my favorite lines in the movie. And he's like, so you mean to tell me the two Utes? And that's when Herbert Munster jumps in and is like, I'm sorry. Did you say Utes? Landry, I've been repeating that line for 33 years. Like, I'm sorry. Did you say Utes?
Yeah,
I cannot watch the Utah sports team, like the University of Utah, I'm assuming, or Utah University. I actually don't know. Whenever they're the Utah Utes. And whenever they play and they're on TV and I walk into a room and Utah is playing, either in my head or out loud, I will say 100% of the time, I'm sorry, did you say Utes? He meant to say Utes.
I had a friend text me before because I told him I was watching this movie and he was like, Utes, and like all capital letters. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? And then, of course, I figured it out halfway through.
I'm not alone.
Yeah.
So then he's now starting to cross-examine these witnesses, okay? And one of the guys said he saw the two guys, Daniel Son and Stan, walk into the Sacco Suds, and they were there for no more than 5 minutes before the gunshot. And the whole point of the defense is to say, we went in, made our purchase, and left. Two other guys showed up in a similar car, killed the clerk, robbed the place. Let's be honest, probably didn't even rob it. Slush puppy. Right. Okay, we know why he was killed.
Exactly.
Yeah. Man, there was probably no robbery. Honestly, I don't want to say it, but he did. Like 100% deserved to die for the way he poured that slush puppy. So the whole case is based on, you know, is it these two guys or two different guys? And this guy's saying, you know, he cooks his breakfast in 5 minutes. And Vinny asks him, what'd you get? What'd you eat? Because I made grits. And Vinny's like, I learned from a guy who is very heavy-handed on the lard that grits take about 20 minutes to make. And this guy claims he did grits in 5 minutes. He must have magic grits. Did you buy these grits from the same guy that sold Jack his beanstalks?
Incredible line, yeah.
Yeah. Like, this is when you really start to see Vinny start to come into his own. Like, he's
this
really
is also, he also gives him, like, the perfect, like, slight for, you know, only a Southerner in a movie, because I feel like most people wouldn't care, but he, like, drops a weight. Wait, were you using instant grits? The guy's like, no.
No, I wrote that down. No self-respecting Southerner uses instant grits.
Right.
I take pride in my grits. All right. Vinny roasts this witness because he knows that it takes more than 5 minutes. Okay, so poking holes in the stories. Okay? That's what a good attorney does. Vinny goes to jail. Oh, this is when he goes to jail. Okay. Apparently, he's held in contempt. Now he finally goes to jail after the day's over. That's when he sleeps like a baby. Next witness. This is a guy that has some of the worst acting scars I've ever seen. Okay, he's right up there with like Edward James Olmos. I think that's the guy they're thinking of. Pretty rough. Disgusting windows. This is a guy that claims to have eyewitnessed seeing the two guys walk into the Sacco Suds, shoot him, and walk out. Then he pokes holes with photographs. You've got dirty windows. Filthy windows. You got dirty screens. You got bushes. You got trees. You got all kind of stuff in your way. But you positively ID'd these two boys? I don't think so. Next witness. This poor lady has Coke bottle glasses. Absolute Coke bottle glasses. Seemed like a sweet lady.
Yeah,
Vinny says you can't. I don't think you can see. She's like, no, I've already had. Hold on here. She said she had like a number of times she's changed her prescription. Which honestly.
About 10 times.
Where in rural Alabama are you changing prescriptions 10 times? They're not exactly a lens crafters. Okay. I don't know where this lady is going. 1960s, 70s, and 80s. Bumble scum Alabama.
You got to take your 7-hour ride on horseback to the exactly. New York City.
To book a train ticket. So Vinny proves that she can't see. He holds up two fingers. She said she was 100 feet from the crime scene. He stands 50 feet, says, how many fingers am I holding up? The judge, funny scene. The judge goes, let it be known that he is holding up two fingers. And that's when Ben is like, judge.
He's just flexing. He's just showing off. He's like, I've got great vision. I'm 90 years old.
Yeah, no, this is my favorite line when he's like, all right, now, sweetheart, how many fingers am I holding up now? And you. And only you. Like, really making the judge feel like an idiot. Another big win. So now he's just checking boxes. There was three eyewitnesses. He's poked holes in all three. Now Vinny brings on a surprise. Oh, no. The attorney tells Vinny, I got a surprise witness. Got a surprise witness. And here I was thinking that Herman Munster was carrying on this court with the same sophistication as any big city, you know, courtroom. And that goes straight out the window when they allow this FBI forensic scientist, specialist, I should say, to take the stand. This guy basically says that the tire marks outside the Sacco Suns matches the tires on Danielson and Stan's car. Okay. Judge then gets a note. Damning piece of evidence. Absolutely damning piece of evidence. Judge gets a note and calls recess. Vinny, I need to see you. Calls him into the courtroom. Calls him into the judge's chambers, I should say. Tells him, hey, look, the clerk from New York faxed me. Jerry Gallo is dead. That's when Vinny's bullshit meter is going off again. Always coming up with the right answer. It says, did you say Jerry Gallo? No, I said Jerry Callo. All right. Like, at this point, shame on the judge. Okay.
Right.
Shame on the judge. Like,
you have three times, man.
Disrespected at every turn with this guy. And you have just given him so much rope. Like, it's time to hang him. The judge tells him, look, I'm going to call the clerk of New York. We're gonna square this away right now. Clerk's at lunch. That's the best lunch break in the history of lunch breaks. Danielson and Stan.
True. Yeah.
Like butterfly effect. Butterfly effect. That clerk answers the phone. No movie. There is no movie if that clerk answers the phone. Right? Doesn't. So now the judge tells them, "All right, the clerk will be back in an hour. You got 1 hour to win this case before we finally catch you up in all your lives." Right. So Vinny goes to work, back to court. Between the recess and court resuming, Vinny meets with Marissa Tomei. It does not go well. She hands him some photos from her camera. He's looking at him, mocking her, not taking her seriously, telling her, you can't help me. What good are you going to do for me? Oh, like just absolutely roasting this lady, right? Who at this point did nothing but tried to help him.
Yeah.
So
basically just been like amazing.
Yes. So Vinny comes back to court and cross-examines the FBI expert. We learned the tires are very popular. The most popular tire brand on the market, okay? And then Vinny notices something in one of the photographs that Marissa Tomei gave him. But maybe he shouldn't have been such a dick, all right? Just a little thought, you know? So now Vinny goes, all right, judge, I need 5 minutes to get my next witness. They're not in the courtroom. And then he hands the sheriff, well, I thought he did a good job, hands the sheriff a note. And the sheriff's like, what is this? He's like, just do me a favor. I've only got a few minutes. Help me out. So the sheriff leaves. Vinny gets Marissa Tomei, physically drags her into court. Okay. Now she takes the stand. Marissa Tomei is the definition of a hostile witness at this point. Her attorney wants to verify her expertise because she's being taken on the stand and presented as a expert in car mechanics. And the attorney wants to verify that she's an expert. And this is one of my favorite lines. When the attorney asks her, he goes, so what do you do for a living? And she goes, I'm an out-of-work hairdresser. And he goes, out-of-work hairdresser. Just the way he says it is so perfect. Like, oh, you're here taking the stand as an auto mechanic. That
this is going to be easy, yeah.
On a murder trial. And you mean to tell me you're an out-of-work hairdresser? Like, oh, okay. Oh, this all makes sense. And I don't know, something about the way he said this made me laugh. Okay.
Do you know where that guy's from, or do you know anything that guy's acted in before?
I've seen him, couldn't tell you who he is.
He's the coach in Mighty Ducks for like the bad team.
Was he wearing a turtleneck
in Mighty Ducks? I don't remember that necessarily, but yeah, he's just the one that's like always like, you know, telling his team to like play dirty and like winning's all that matters, that kind of stuff.
100% right. Never wrong. Never wrong. All right. Now, Marissa Tomei has taken the stand. She has proven to the attorney, state prosecutor, that she's an expert witness. And she does it in such spectacular fashion. He asks her a question that's essentially a trick question. And the audience doesn't know it's a trick question. And she goes on to explain to him why it's a trick question and just absolutely nails it. So she is allowed as a witness. This is, hands down, without a doubt, the best scene of the movie. The only scene better than the porch. Okay. So good. And Vinny hands her the photograph that she gave him, and the photograph's of tire marks leaving the sacrosuds. And this is the smoking gun. This is the piece of evidence that proves the boys are innocent. Okay. And basically, what it is there are two flat tire marks when they go over the curb, and the car had an independent rear axle that made these tire marks. Because if you had a solid rear axle, as one tire went on the curb, the other tire would come up on its edge. There wouldn't be flat surfaces. Okay. And then she references anybody that's ever been stuck in the mud in Alabama knows you step on the gas, one tire spins, other tire does nothing. And
Incredible.
everyone
Marissa
on the jury
Tomei.
is like, yep, damn right. Damn right. Like, it happens to me every morning. Like, damn right. This girl gets it. So they now come up with a new theory that this was not a 1964 Buick Skylark. No. This had to be a 1963 Pontiac Tempest that made these tire marks. Okay. Both cars made by GM. Both cars came in metallic mint green, and both cars had
Oh
the
man.
same exact tires. Okay. Smoking gun.
Will the coincidences never end?
Never ends. Never ends. So things are going really well for Vinny and the boys at this point, okay? So things are starting to go in their favor. He just knocked down all three eyewitnesses. He just brought his own witness on the testimony, who basically just proved that by her testimony, this was not a 1964 Buick Skylark. And then the sheriff comes in. And the sheriff holds up a piece of paper and say, Vinny. Vinny now says, Your Honor, I bring up Sheriff whatever his name was. This guy takes a stand, still under oath, and he doesn't really know what to say. So he's like, "So, Sheriff, what do you got?" And the sheriff's like, "Well, on a hunch, I searched the database for any 1963 Pontiac Tempests that have recently been confiscated." And he says, "We found one in Mississippi. Two men driving a 1963 Pontiac Tempest were arrested in Memphis, or I'm sorry, in Mississippi." And in their possession was a revolver.
Same caliber that
Same
killed
caliber
our
revolver used to
slush puppy
kill
Menace.
the hoarding slush puppy clerk. So they finally got the smoking gun, realistic, like figuratively with the car that, had the independent rear suspension. And then they actually got the murder weapon now. So now you got a murder weapon, right? So I didn't realize the state prosecutor could do this. He basically just says, well, in light of new evidence, all charges are dropped. Right. Didn't know he could do that. Didn't know that was his authority.
Right.
But, state drops all charges. Vinny and the judge have a nice little moment. They have a very pleasant moment. The judge is basically like kissing his ass, shaking his hands, thinking that Jerry Callow was this great lawyer. Turns out Marissa Tomei just pulled one over on him, has a few friends down in the clerk's office. Long story short, everyone's, shaking hands and kissing babies. The case has been won. Movie is over. The credits roll. Two things post credits. One, the boom operator is named Pud Cusack.
Wow, missed that.
Easy to miss. I thought General Putnam's nickname was Old Pud. And I was like, Old Pud and Pud Cusack?
That's
I was so
incredible.
excited, Landry. I was stoked. I was writing this shit down. And then I referenced my notes and was like, it's not Old Pud, it's Old Putt.
Oh, so
That
close.
was just so deflated. I thought I had something. I did, bro. I thought I had
You're
something.
to the conspiracy of all conspiracies.
Turns out I'm
Connect the
just an idiot that
dots.
can't read. So, the last thing, you noticed, did you listen to the music playing on the credits of this movie?
Yeah, it was actually a really cool country song. It was like Travis Tritt. I Spotified it after I heard it.
Oh, that was Travis Tritt. That is 1,000% a movie, or I'm sorry, 1,000% a song that was written for this movie. That entire song
Yeah, it was
was
like,
the plot of this
yes.
movie.
Yeah, it had to have been.
It was
Yeah, no,
so good.
it
I'm not
was
going to
good.
say
I
it was
liked
like
it.
10 out of 10, but I enjoyed
Well,
it. Like I really did enjoy it.
I'm not a huge country fan. In the past like 10 years, I've gotten into country from like, I feel like somewhere in the 80s country died off a little bit, but sometimes that early 90s stuff before they like introduced all the like digital production, it's not bad. That was a good song.
Yeah, I like classic country. I don't care for modern day country, but I will
Same.
say Brooks and Dunn, Neon Moon, right around the same time frame you're talking about, that's a banger.
Okay.
Neon
Okay.
Moon is a banger. Yeah, but that's
I'll
it.
have to,
You hear
man.
the music?
One of the things that really sticks out to me in this movie. It's again, just like watching a 90s film as opposed to like modern day stuff. There were so many opportunities where this movie could have taken, like where the characters could have just had like this, like really negative experience, but like everything just works out. And it's almost so refreshing. Just like, I expected the judge to come out and like ruin Vinny's day at the very end, you know, like, oh, I've got your name and now you're going to be arrested. And it's like, oh, we're going to end on a dark, realistic note. But no, it's the 90s. Like, there are characters in this movie that are complete like cartoon caricatures of like real people, like the judge, like some of the, you know, the witnesses. And they're just kind of all sprinkled in with this like semi, like kind of just held together by some straw, like realistic story of a courtroom drama. But it just works. It was fun, funny. Not everything has to be realistic. Yeah. Really good. Charming movie. I enjoyed it.
So I'm going to ask you, what do you give it?
How many stars am I going to give this film? I am going to say I would probably give it a, I'm deciding between a really, really solid 3 out of 5 and a weak 4 out of 5. And the only reason I would give it a 3 out of 5 is if we're talking about what didn't work in this film for me, I really could not get past Joe Pesci and Marissa Tomei being a couple. Like, I feel like that was weird.
Yep.
But I
so
mean,
what do you get? 3 or 4?
I think I'm gonna go with a 3. A strong 3. I would watch it again though. I feel like this is a movie that after you rewatch it, it just gets better and better. Yeah, even today, I watched it last week. So this morning I watched like clips of it on YouTube. And I found myself just really enjoying rewatching those clips. Like, they were all, I noticed things I didn't notice the first time, and I did enjoy them a lot. So I'm going to give it a 3 with, but I really thought fondly of it as well.
There you go. You
know, potential to grow.
3 3/4 stars. 3.75, baby. That's my
score. I don't
score.
Even know how 3. To draw 7, a 5. three quarters of a star.
You just leave off a few tips.
Okay. That's a good point.
Not too many. Just a couple.
So how do you think this film's going to age in 30 years from now? How many years are we? 33 years into this?
We're
film?
33 away. I could see it not holding up a lot, you know? Yeah, because in 33 years or 30 years from now, when the robots take over, probably the first thing they want to do is probably wipe clean early 90s Southern culture. And that'll be the first first part of society that gets targeted and erased. All the literature, both books, will be burned, and it's just going to be tough. I don't think it's going to hold up in the future, but right now I'm still riding that wave of being a 10-year-old kid in 1992, loving every second of this movie.
Yeah, heck yeah. I think that maybe this will kind of hold up in one regard. I think the performances are really strong. I think its comedic tone helps to smooth over like the unrealisticness of a lot of the stuff here. So I feel like it could go either way. I feel like it could age really well. I feel like people are going to look at it in 30 years and just be like, I don't understand how these two people are supposed to be in a relationship. But that's probably been the story of this movie for its entire
lifespan. It'll be a 1,000 years and they'll still be asking that question, Landry.
Oh, like, I saw that. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I saw that Ben Stiller actually was like really close to getting the part before Joe Pesci did. I just saw like an interview clip of him saying that he really regretted one more than almost anything in his career not landing this part.
Well, I'm glad he did, because Joe Pesci was perfect.
I completely agree. And I think that this movie would have been disserviced by almost anyone else other than Joe Pesci.
Agreed.
Who stole the show for you? If you have to give it to one person, it's easy for me. It's Marissa Tomei. I didn't even know she was in this movie. To be honest, I didn't know who she was at all. And then I looked her up and I was like, oh, I remember her from that episode in Seinfeld. And I remember her from the Spider-Man movies as Aunt May, you know, all grown up, so to speak. So she was
clearly the answer is Marissa Tomei, but allow me to take a different approach. It's because anybody that watches this movie and knows that Marissa Tomei won a Best Supporting Actress, and then you see that performance, you're going to go, just deserved. Fantastic job. I'm going to say the people that stole it were the stuttering prosecutor, or the stuttering public defender, excuse me. I thought he did a fantastic job.
I'll never forget that performance.
And then I thought the judge did a fantastic job.
Oh, yeah. He does such a good job.
He did such a great job.
That was his last performance before he died. He died in 1993.
Really? Damn. And then number three, I'm going to go Daniel-san, because I thought this was a very good acting performance from Daniel-san, way better than Karate Kid. I mean, you definitely saw the growth.
Yeah, I think I agree. I don't know. Well, I think he does a great job in here. I'm not going to argue that. I think rewatching Karate Kid together and even looking editing our episode the other day, he did a good job in Karate Kid. I thought he was, you know, he's a punk, but he's supposed to be. He's annoying as hell in Karate Kid, though. He's not annoying in this.
No, but that's my three. Then you can make a case for, you know, obviously, I think there's just a lot of solid performances in this movie. The state prosecutor did a really good job. The sheriff did a really good job.
Yeah,
they did a really good job casting this movie. I thought there were no, you know, there were no holes in the ship. Like it was a really solid job.
Well, that's where we're going to land. 3¾ stars from you, 3 stars from me. But I would recommend this to anybody who's looking for a good 90s comedy. I think it holds up really well. And that is all the time that we have today. It's been a fun one. We've got a couple episodes left this season. If you would like to write in to us at blasttothepastcast@gmail.com, you can tell us what you think about My Cousin Vinny. You can also maybe recommend us an episode to do on our next season. We look forward to letting y'all know about some social media stuff in the future, and we will see you next time on Blast of the Past.
Adios.